With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got all the essentials for comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style you can count on. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and effortless looks. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Hi everyone and welcome to Power Talk, and on this episode of Power Talk I am joined by Justin of the Paranormal Monkey podcast. Without further ado, let me bring Justin in and we'll get this show on the road. Hi Justin.
Hi Reese, how are we doing? It's nice to be here. It's lovely being here.
Yeah, very nice, very nice. I thought I wanted to get you on because you're a little bit of a different, how can I put it? It's not just a podcast, it's more of a kind of a live stream kind of interview thing that you run, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it started off really going way back. I used to have like a previous live stream podcast when I was part of a group called Paranormal Truth, when I was at a channel out investigating. And we used to do it every Monday, and sometimes we'd be talking amongst ourselves or talking about the paranormal and certain news and or TV shows and things like that. But the bit that I found most interesting is when we got on guests, and it was that bit which kind of really... I really enjoyed speaking to all manner of people, particularly eyewitnesses, and you know, whether you have academics on and things like that. And so really what I wanted to do was continue that. You know, my old channel finished, and the whole thing about me is I have this genuine fascination with the paranormal and trying to work out, as we all are, what the hell is going on. and I really enjoy talking to all manner of people, whether it's the ghost hunters, whether it's eyewitnesses, whether it's the academics, and getting everybody's points of view. I'm in that position where, because I have done ghost hunting as well and had some personal experiences of the paranormal, I can kind of lend a bit of additional content to what people are talking about as well sometimes.
Where did the name come from? Because that's a really unique name that you've chosen.
I started off, I think I called myself Paranormal Monk, because I kind of like the ring of a monk, you know, like whether it's, you know, one of these old tales of phantom monks and things like that. I started off as Paranormal Monk. Then I used to work for a ghost event company. And this ghost event company, they had what was, they had their own version. Remember like the Boo Bears? You know, in America, you have these bears that would go off a bit like a REM pod if anybody got too close to it. And they had these American things called Boo Bears. Mm-hmm. But this company I worked for had a monkey, and they used to call it Paranormal Monkey, and I just, it always stuck. I think I really like that. So when I was thinking of a podcast name, it became Paranormal Monkey, not Paranormal Monk, but So initially I decided not to use my own name in it, and went down the whole Paranormal Monkey route, and it just, like I say, it just stuck, and it's carried on from there.
Where did your first interest in the paranormal, or where did it happen?
I could stem certain things back from when I was about 15, 16 years old, and I read This House is Haunted by Guy Lyon Playfair, detailing the Enfield Poltergeist case, and that had a huge, I had a huge interest in that, and I just wanted to experience things like Morris did in the home. I wanted to experience that for myself. It just kind of rang with me. But before then, I can trace it right back to being 8 years old, and in early 1980s, and my family had a poltergeist for 6 weeks. From the day we moved into a new property, it was a property that was, it used to be a shop. It was built in the 1890s, was at one point a shop and was 1.2 homes. Then it became one home. And anyway, when we were there, it was one home. From the very first night, my mum first started to have feelings of that something was in the property with us. For 6 weeks, we had all manner of things happening, and of which my parents, who were very no-nonsense, level-headed people, just didn't know what the hell was going on. They just knew that objects were moving, toys were moving, walls were banging, TV was changing channels on its own. And we had a series of things over that time. And although my parents kept a lot from me, their reactions and certain feelings that I had and certain rooms that were particularly cold, including my bedroom, these things stuck in my brain from very early on.
With this whole poltergeist phenomenon that you experienced, did you experience it directly, or was it something that happened around you?
Some things I remember. So it was certain smells, and it wasn't, I always had a lot kept from me. My mum and dad tried to protect me and my younger brothers from it. But I remember my room always smelled of mud. Whether there's any connection to that, I don't know. Where it was always freezing cold, even in the height of summer, even if there were radiators on, even if it was double glazed windows. My room, and only my room, was freezing cold. But then I would witness reactions of my dad. I mean, and my mum, who would laugh about things like the TV changing channel on its own. My dad just found it all really quite silly. But my mum was really quite scared. So a lot of it I kind of found out over the years. For instance, I'll give an example where my parents would go to the supermarket on the weekend, they'll lock the door up, and my parents would pack away all our toys. You know, there was me and my younger brothers were only about three or four at the time. So we had loads of toys everywhere. They'd put out like a little toy in a toy chest. We'd go to the supermarket, come back, and these toys would be found scattered all around the home, not in the toy chest anymore, but all over the place. Another incident which my mum only reported to me, actually, when I was not that long ago, actually, there was a wall in our kitchen that led to a hallway regularly. And she said on an almost daily basis, it would be banged from the other side, you know, really aggressively. This partition wall would be banged really hard. It being the 80s, my mum had these decorative plates on the wall. She was worried that these plates would fall off the wall and smash.
You know? I remember those.
Yeah. And she'd get more and more annoyed because she thought that these decorative plates would just smash to the floor. So my mum, being from North London, didn't take any nonsense after a little while and would swear at it and tell it to stop. And it would. It would just stop straight away. But that was almost like a daily thing. You know, and the skeptical side of me says, well, it could have been pipes, it could have been this, it could have been something under the ground, it could have been, there's all manner of things what can cause vibrations, but not on command when my mum gets annoyed with it and tells it to effing stop, and then it does, basically.
Did you ever get any sort of resolve from, you know, you say it lasted for a number of weeks, what made it stop?
Yeah, it was really interesting. Like I said, we'd only moved in, we'd only been into that property a number of weeks. It was a brand new, it should have been an exciting time. But the previous owner of the property came back. She was visiting her friends in the local area. She came back to the property, was interested in what we were doing. And we were kind of like a little bit, my mum and dad were a bit embarrassed actually, because my dad was a builder. So he was knocking down walls. My mum was repainting, redecorating, wallpapering, that kind of thing. And they were a bit embarrassed because they thought that the owner might be a little bit upset about what we were doing to her, you know, her home, essentially, that she had been a home for many years. Anyway, she was all very pleasant and was just genuinely interested and walked around. And my mum and dad didn't mention anything about the poltergeist, obviously, because it's just one of those things we kind of kept as a, together, you know, didn't tell anybody about it. And then before she left, she turned around to my mum and just said, "You've been having some really strange things happen here, haven't you?" And my mum was quite taken aback. She didn't quite know what to say. She was like, well, yes. She says, "It's okay." She says, "It's Martin. He's come with me now, so you won't have any more problems." And Martin was her husband who died in a motorbike accident in the next village along previous year. She couldn't stand being in the same property as the property that she shared with her husband. So she moved, decided to move house, and she moved to Oxford. Yeah, anyway, so she left, and nothing else happened after that from that day on. So everything just stopped. And I find that really intriguing as well.
Yeah, I mean, considering that, you know, you had all these things going on and all of a sudden that it just stops like that. I mean, the poltergeist cases, you know, you get that when just it just normally just stops. But the lady came back and then tells you the story that her husband passing away. Maybe it was the ghost of her husband that was trying to get someone to take notice of him.
Absolutely. Could have been coincidence that it just so happened. You know, was it, did it in some way bring some kind of stress relief to my mum, knowing that, you know, that, oh, that's the reason. So she mentally calmed down, which also helped resolve it. I don't know. It was just very, very odd, very strange. That's not to say that we didn't use it, you know, as a kid growing up and as a teenager growing up. If as soon as we had babysitters around, we absolutely told the ghost story of this poltergeist and terrified the babysitters. And then I took great glee in that for many, many years as a kid. And by the time they left, they were glad to be out of our place.
You don't see them again. They're gone. That's it.
They wouldn't want to return.
So when you got a little bit older, your sort of your teenage years, did you sort of get into the whole kind of ghost TV shows? Would you have any favourites?
Yeah, always. There's always favourites. But my ones were always Arthur C. Clarke. So this is in the days before Most Haunted. So It was Arthur C. Clarke's World of Strange Powers, I think it was called. And there was also there was a TV show called Ghost Hunters, but it was an original Ghost Hunters, not the American. Yeah. And between those two programs, it kind of fueled that fascination. So in later years, then you have the likes of Ghost Watch and things like that. But I just found that a bit silly. But I love the Ghost Hunters TV show, the old British one. It had great atmosphere about that TV show. Stemmed from there, really. It never left me.
It was like each episode was a mini film documentary of different events. It wasn't set to be overly dramatic or to be a scare fest. It was just giving you the facts of what happened and you to kind of make up your own mind. I mean, back in the 70s when I was growing up as a little boy, I would, you know, see the shows like Leap in the Dark and stuff like that, where you would have those kind of paranormal talk shows, the very early, you know, first generation kind of shows. And it kind of, a lot of it went over my head, you know. I just wanted to see scary ghost photos and stuff. But it was mainly sort of people standing around talking and interviewing one another. But sometimes that's kind of the best, you know, the best way, you know. You don't need all the dramatics. And growing up, as you said, when you sort of get into these film, watching these programs and watching the films and stuff, it kind of bolsters it a little bit and keeps your interest going. I was just wondering, when you were a teenager, did you still have did your interest grow at the paranormal? Did you kind of put it aside?
Yeah, well, I think it kind of grew because, I mean, I was joining the Society for Psychical Research, I think, when I was 15. And it was when I first joined them, and I was an avid reader of things. But you're absolutely right. You know, it was all of those old TV shows, because it was done in a very matter-of-fact way. Mm. I think that helped my viewpoint I went about things, you know, later on in life. You know, life gets in the way. I married, I divorced, I had kids and things like that. And you return back to these things in later life, which I have done. And that fascination's still there. because those old TV shows, I think, were skeptical in their nature. And I blame the likes of Arthur C. Clarke for that, because he was a real skeptic.
Yeah.
And I blame these TV shows that didn't have people running and screaming and shouting and hollering, and there was nothing dramatic. It was just, this is what occurred, this is what happened, and, you know, and they left it at that. And it was, like you say, it was up to you to make up your own mind. I just know that having read about the Enfield Poltergeist case, I just wanted to experience it. And I think it's partly because I missed out from early childhood. Like I said, I was protected from this poltergeist in my family home. And after I read about the Enfield case, I almost could imagine myself being in the living room of the Enfield house, you know, having a Lego brick thrown at me. I wanted it. I wanted that experience of, what if this is real?
Hmm.
What if this is real? I want to be amongst that. So I initially went out on my own. I, you know, this is now getting into my 30s, and I was now going out on my own and just taking a camera, and I just wanted to document it. Doing the investigating on YouTube, it kind of stemmed from there, but we still kept it very matter of fact, very no nonsense. We're going in with a camera and a voice recorder. That's it. No gadgets, no spirit boxes, no dowsing rods, no crystals, no nothing like that. And just like, if it's here, we want it to happen. I'm not trying to create something that isn't there. We just want it to be, if there's something there, then let it show itself.
Where was the first place that you decided to do an investigation, and how did it make you feel?
I'd gone with different ghost event companies, actually, when I first started off, you know, just because I didn't really know what I was doing. Yeah. I'd watched plenty of TV shows, but I had that safety net of going with a ghost event company, and I went to a place in Lincolnshire where I'm from. To a place called the Old Nick Theatre in Gainsborough in Lincolnshire, which is used to be an old Victorian police station, later became a theatre. There's a section of it which still has the old police cells. It's a brilliant atmospheric place to go to. And I went there. Well, I heard kind of groans from an empty cell. And that was it then. I was like, well, maybe there is something to this. You know, maybe there is something going on. And after that first one, I went to one more, and I went to a different one, and I went to another one. I thought, well, rather than paying for it, I just want to see where I can go on my own. So I went to St. Botolph's Church, which is, again, in Lincolnshire, a little way away, quite remote, quite well known. It's meant to be a place with supposed demonic activity. And I just thought I'd grab a camera, set off, and check it out for myself. And I was a bit nervous, obviously, because when you're on your own, there's no backup. You are a little bit more aware of your surroundings. But I was never really scared of doing things. I was more scared of people invading your personal space and just turning up than I was of any ghosts. But yeah, I just knew that I had that interest. It kind of, and it just continued.
When you're doing your investigation and you're out on your own, or you're with a small team and you are experiencing something, do you have any certain protocol in place where you double record, or you have cameras filming cameras? Is there anything like that, or are you just going to wait and see what happens and kind of use your own senses to document?
I mean, the best way, I suppose, is, you know, when a bit later on, when I was part of this YouTube channel called Paranormal Truth, it was me and another chap called Dale, and we went all to places all around the country, and we always set out to try and document the reality of things, whether it's there was nothing going on, you know, which was 9 times out of 10 exactly what happened. There was nothing going on. But we always thought, well, if we are going to capture it, first of all, we don't want some kind of really poor resolution cameras going on. We want a really good camera, you know, whether it's 1080p or 4K camera. We want there to be really good quality voice recorders. We know we weren't using, you know, I have a real bugbear with things like DR60s, which is what still some people use, and just really poor audio equipment. So we wanted the best video equipment, we wanted the best audio equipment, and we just wanted to be up front. And you're right, that certain things that we had to try and make sure of is we try to, you know, part of us was always aware of trying to not document ourselves, you know, not looking at ourselves, because I hated that when I watched TV shows and it was all about the presenter. But in certain cases, you know, when there's things like EVPs or you hear a voice, you do want there to be at least a camera in the vicinity, you know, pointing to each of us so you can actually see whether it was us doing the talking. I always took at least two cameras, but it's quite hard because, you know, sometimes things happen when you least expect it. And it invariably happens when you're not pointing a camera towards it. But you try and get over that by having multiple voice recorders in different areas so you can at least try to narrow down where the sound may be coming from. As much as possible, you've got all bases covered in terms of when you're going out and about.
Before we started recording, you were telling me a little bit about 30 East Drive, and you've done many, many hours of investigating there. How did that come about, and what were your experiences? Were you skeptical?
Very skeptical. Extremely sceptical. It was actually the first place myself and Dale went to. It was the first place we managed to, we did our very first live stream from 30 East Drive. Coming from a very kind of sceptical mindset, I wasn't expecting anything. On the very first thing, we had the odd kind of occasional little taps and occasional little noises, but nothing particularly to write home about. When certainly it didn't really change my mind about the property. And as time went on and the more time we spent in there, and I'm talking hundreds of hours in that place, you know, we became really quite sure of ourselves that it was not haunted. We became quite sure that it was a money-making scam by the owner. And I think that what's happening is in people's imaginations. So I was of the view that something that a poltergeist case that occurred in 1969 was never, ever going to be occurring in 2024. Or whenever we were going, we thought it was unheard of for the same poltergeist to be hanging around a property because it's very much linked to people and individuals and the family. So yeah, I was very skeptical of the place. But weirdly, we kind of have the odd little thing, which was okay enough for us to keep going back, I suppose. But again, we were still like, well, it could have been this, it could have been that. You know, as a lot of investigators do, you find rational reasons for different noises. You know, it could have been this, it could have been that, it could have been outside, or it could have been the neighbors, or it could have been a contracting floorboard or whatever. Anyway, we kept on going. One particular occasion, we'd booked in 2 days there, and the first day we'd invited Rosie O'Connell from the Ghost Club and John Fraser from the SPR to join us. And on that first night, we got nothing at all. Well, we didn't expect anything, you know, so it was not much of a surprise. But the second night, we'd invited some followers of our channel to join us. We had I think we invited 8 people over, so we had a total of 10 people in the property. You do the kind of thing, you're calling out, and we weren't getting a huge deal. So, but there was a number of women in there, and the women decided, oh, actually, well, how about we try to get something going, and we'll have a little seance in one of the bedrooms, and we'll sit in a circle and we'll see if we can try and invite something to come towards us. If the males of this are just frightening them away, maybe the females will do so. So we're like, yeah, okay, fair enough. So all the men went downstairs. There was about 4 or 5 of us, and the women stayed upstairs, and they went in Philip's bedroom, and they sit over a little while, felt that something was in the room with them. One of the ladies felt that her arm was being gripped by hand on her arm, and they start to think, okay, there's something maybe with us. But instead of giving it attention, they decided to leave. They decided to leave the bedroom, go downstairs, and just have a little chat with us, but not talk about and not give it any attention. So we were downstairs in the kitchen, chatting away, all of us, all 10 of us, about this and that, and having a cup of tea. As we were talking, we were kind of interrupted by knocking. Like this banging from upstairs directly above our heads from Philip's bedroom. It kind of took us by surprise, but we carried on ignoring it and carried on chatting. And this banging became a little bit more insistent. And we had a camera on the landing, so we knew that nobody was in there. Everybody was downstairs. Everybody was accounted for. And it wasn't from the next door neighbor. It wasn't outside. It was directly above our heads. So I was incredibly excited, but also I realized we had no audio equipment in that room. It was just one of those things. We had a camera on the landing, but nothing. We had no voice recorders in there. So I ran upstairs, ran into the bedroom, put a voice recorder on the carpet, and then ran back downstairs again, hoping above hope that it would continue. And after a little while, it did. So we could hear it bang, bang, bang. And listening back later on, you could even determine which piece of furniture it was coming from. It's coming from the TV cabinet in Philip's bedroom for anybody that knows the 30 East Drive. So about a dozen bangs, each one becoming a little bit more aggressive, a little bit louder. Anyway, after about 12 bangs, I went back upstairs. I retrieved the voice recorder because it was the one thing we had never had or never captured was genuine, poltergeist, audible evidence. We thought, well, we could at least try and get this analysed because it was beyond belief, really. So I collected the voice recorder, got downstairs, put the earphones on, and was listening back to these recordings. And I was ecstatic because these crystal clear bangings on this furniture. Really shocked, really surprised, but I was ecstatic. I was passing the headphones from one person to the next. I listened to this, listen to this, listen to what we've got. It's absolutely incredible. We've got it. We've actually got something. But then maybe a couple of minutes after that, again, whilst we're still ignoring it and still downstairs, none of us went upstairs, the heaviest stamping directly above our heads from the doorway of Philip's bedroom, walking and stamping, I want to say walking, stamping, we could track it from downstairs in the kitchen. We tracked it diagonally, going stamping diagonally across Philip's bedroom, and then it just stopped. But it stopped, and it had so much force, this stamping, that the downstairs light shade in the kitchen dining area was swaying afterwards from the force of this stamping. And we just looked at each other and we were just like, you know, swearing, laughing, kind of just, it was beyond belief. And we had never had anything remotely like that. I don't think I'll ever have that again, to be honest, but something revealed itself to us in a very, very aggressive way, and then just stopped. And I keep going back to it, and and the good thing, as I suppose, is we've got multiple witnesses who witnessed the same thing. Everybody was accounted for. Nobody was upstairs. Also, the other odd thing is we had a live stream camera on at that point on the landing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were people watching on the live stream. But the really odd thing for me is that on that live stream, everybody at home could hear our reactions in the kitchen, but they could not hear the banging, heavy stamping that was going on camera. But to us, it was deafening downstairs. It was just the most bizarre thing, really odd. I had to very quickly change my mind about 30's drive after that.
So I'm just wondering, when you experienced that and you documented that evidence, did you kind of reach out to any other people that had been in there who maybe had a similar experience?
Well, we'd always been speaking to other investigators and things like that. And some people have documented not the same activity, but the heavy, the wrapping on furniture. You know, there's people who've recorded that downstairs in the coal shed, and people have recorded it in different rooms. But I don't know of many people that have got got something that aggressive. To me, it was, you know, you can't help but put personal feelings on it. And it felt aggressive. It felt like a male dominant spirit, which, is bizarre. But yeah, we spoke to different people and we were able to analyze the initial knocking that we had on the voice recorder. The waveform on that matched the waveform of genuine poltergeist cases. The waveform is different compared to if you were going to knock on a table, for instance, yourself, it would create a different waveform to when a poltergeist knocks on furniture. So yeah, our waveforms matched that of genuine poltergeist cases as well. So yeah, that was interesting.
So it was almost like the sound was imprinted on the audio.
Yeah. I was going to say the other strange thing is obviously the fact that the camera upstairs, which was right outside the bedroom where it occurred, barely caught the stamping sounds. It was, and for us, and for me thinking back, was it actually occurring across the bedroom? We were kind of tracking it across the room, and it, you know, or was it going through the ceiling itself on the side of the kitchen, which is where we were, which is why it may be muffled from the camera upstairs. So many more questions, and very, very strange indeed. But yeah, that was the one incident where I thought, okay, this place is actually haunted. but ever since then, nothing else has really happened. You know, I've been there since, and I've been there. I mean, I say nothing much has happened. I've had some weird things, children giggling in front of me, keys jangling in locks, and things like that. And one of those, there was a point when part of the 6-day investigation that we had at 30's Drive, we invited Kieran O'Keefe, the lovely, great Kieran O'Keefe, to join us. And whilst he was with us, We had a couple of incidents occur, but one of them, which I find most interesting, is we had two knocks on the kitchen door happen right in front of us, right in front of me, right in front of Steve from the Ouija Brothers, and right in front of Kieran O'Keefe. And Kieran wouldn't admit that it was paranormal. Why would he? Bless him. Yeah, well, so we have had other things, but nothing on the scale of the stamping that occurred.
So I've had Kieran on the show. He came on and did an episode with me. And yeah, he's very sort of down to earth, very pragmatic. And if he can look for another answer for something, that's his kind of thing. But sometimes that's a good thing, because it's always good to be a little bit skeptical. When you have evidence, or if you experience something, you can always trick yourself sometimes. But I was going to come back to the whole banging and knocking. Many years ago, I experienced something similar to that, but it wasn't doing a haunted investigation or anything. Basically, a friend lived in a council house, which was built in the 60s, and maybe the late part of the 60s, the early 70s. And his father and his mother lived there, and he lived there with them. I would often go around there after school because he had quite a large bedroom, and it was much bigger than my bedroom. So, we could, play video games or whatever. His father passed away whilst I was there, but he'd passed away. And sometime after that, we used to hear he was plagued with these. He had an attic. And you could hear things moving around, like somebody moving a suitcase around in this attic. And no one would go up there. We were only little kids. So, to us, I remember he told me about it. And I'd never really believed him. He said, I think it's my dad. I think it's my dad that's doing it. He's come back as a ghost or whatever. And I'm like, it's nothing. Just forget about it. I was around there. It was a weekend. It was a Sunday afternoon. And we were in his bedroom just, goofing around, kids playing video games or whatever. And all of a sudden you heard this from right above our heads. It was like somebody moving a case or a trunk. And he said, there it is. And it was like, it was heavy. It was, it wasn't like a bird up there making a nest or whatever. It was something moving up there. I remember his mum coming up the stairs and she said, it's doing it again. Just ignore it. Just ignore it. Of course, I'm a little kid and I'm like, I got to go now. Got to go home and have my dinner, because it scared me. I didn't, what was going on. I thought the house, was going to implode or something. I was going to ask you, so when you experience those things, have you done any other investigations where you've come up against stuff like that? Or have you ever come up against something, I'll use the word demonic, I'll use the word evil, but something that is maybe hasn't got your best interest at heart?
See, I don't even use the word demonic or evil at all. I just, the feeling I've got from this kind of experience I've had, certainly at East Drive, is, and I've not really had it anywhere else. Even these places with big reputations, I just haven't really felt it. But the East Drive place, even though it's felt very flat recently, in the past, you get the distinctive feeling, not that it's evil, but that it's playing with you. And I'll give an example of what I mean by that. In the time that we were there, you kind of get an idea of certain patterns, I suppose. So things would start to happen when you were about to leave the property, or you're about to relax, or you're about to put the kettle on to make a cup of tea, or you'd be sharing a joke about something else. And then lo and behold, something would happen, like it doesn't want to do things on your terms. It wants to do things on its terms. So you just feel as though it's playing with you. One of the incidents I had, which I distinctly remember it, is obviously we used to do these live streams from 8 p.m. till 5 in the morning every night. And we'd be calling out, and we'd do locked off cameras, and we'd try this and we'd try that. We'd take people's suggestions about what we could try. And invariably, nothing much happened. But then there was one time where we did this live stream. Finally, it gets to 5 o'clock, and you're slightly delirious at that point, as you've been staying up all the way through the night. And so you're talking absolute rubbish, and I can go to sleep very quickly. So at 5 o'clock, that was it. It was cameras off. Thanks very much. Join us again tomorrow for the same thing. Blah 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 blah. And I'll basically be crawling into my sleeping bag within about 10-15 minutes, just absolutely shattered. So it was me and Dale. I was in Diane's bedroom, for those that know 30 East Drive, and Phil, Dale went in Philip's bedroom. We both closed our doors. Head hits the pillow, and I could be asleep within 5 minutes. Head hits the pillow. I'm just finally, you know, finally getting to settled, and I hear these marbles smacking against the skirting boards right outside my door. Initially, I'm just too tired to care. I just don't care. I'm just too knackered. Once you've had your sleep, and we were waking up around about lunchtime, I was thinking, you know what? Those marbles being chucked on and thrown around on the skirt, you know, and smacking against these skirting boards, because they're quite a distinctive sound. Mm. And I know exactly what they were. And you're lying there thinking, we were spending 8 hours or so asking for things to happen and nothing happened. And yet the moment we turned the cameras off and the moment we went to bed and the moment we closed the doors, that's when it would throw things around. And I thought, just how, you know, irritating, first of all, but also it's that it goes back to that feeling of, and it's been said about so many times by different authors, a poltergeist is like a petulant child.
Yeah.
And that is exactly, I don't see it as demonic. I see it's petulant. It wants to do things when it wants to do it, not when you ask it to. And so that has stuck with me, this feeling of, well, it doesn't matter what I say, you're either going to do it or you're not going to do it. Part of me thinks, well, was it listening and waiting? It was waiting for us to turn the cameras off. It was listening to everything we were saying. And then when we get to bed, that's when it'll just chuck things around. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't see it as evil. I just see it as petulant.
Kind of answered my question a little bit there. But I was going to ask you if you'd, on an investigation, if you'd ever sort of discussed something that you were going to do at some point in the night and that event happens before you actually put it in place. Has that ever happened to you?
Not so much that specifically, but you do try and second guess. You start second guessing what it might do. You know, so you're thinking, oh, okay, well, if we're, you know, if things happen when we turn the cameras off, we'll make a show of taking the cameras off, but actually we'll keep one camera running.
Mm.
So then you're thinking, oh, maybe we'll start to hide cameras. Maybe we'll start to get, you know, tiny little cameras that we'll see if we can hide cameras, pretend we're turning everything off. And every time we did that, we made a big show off, oh, it's time to go to bed. Oh, we're just going to turn everything off and that's it. We're going, nothing happened.
And it kind of knows that you're doing the fake yawns.
Yeah, exactly.
It kind of knows. It's almost like it's, you know, it's kind of figured you out. What do you really think is going on when it comes to, a lot of people out there will say, well, it's a ghost, it's grandma, or it's granddad, or it's, you know, Angry Bob or whatever. What do you think, and what's your thoughts on what might be happening with paranormal disconnected consciousness or what?
$1 million question. Because yeah, I genuinely don't know. You know, you've got, I mean, for instance, my father died about 7 years ago. And I thought, well, my dad knew that I was into the paranormal. He knew I was into this. Maybe he should have, you know, come on, Dad, do me a favor and just turn up one evening, you know, just walk through my living room and just say, you know what, ghosts do exist, they're here. But I've never had that. There are so many theories out there as to why they're here or why they're occurring. I really, really don't know. It's such a tricky one. I mean, I spoke to Richard Felix a little while ago, and I do like his theory around why are ghosts here, you know, and his theory is around what, you know, the fact that we have so many Victorian type ghosts of long flowing dresses and things like that is because in the Victorian times and slightly earlier from the 1700s, people had the fear of God put into them by the church. In his feeling, and it sounds a perfectly reasonable one, is that maybe these, when you die, they were so terrified of going to hell that they thought, well, maybe they thought themselves a sinner and was terrified that actually the moment of them dying, they didn't want to pass over. So they decided to hang around. And I think that's as good a theory as any. There's only seems to be a few comparatively to the number of people that actually die every year, ghosts. Why are these spirits hanging about? You know, is it because of fear? Is it because I don't buy into this unfinished business type? It's such an impossible one to answer. That's the closest I can get is I think to an extent the church is to blame for some of this.
Okay, so I'm going to add a little bit there. I've heard of Richard's theory before. I go slightly differently on the theory. Talking about people passing, I had both my parents have passed now, but I had an experience 3 days after my dad passed away. I cared for him for nearly 2 years, and after he passed, it was about the third day, I was kind of at my place just deciding what I needed to do, because I was then had to, you know, sort all the personal stuff out. And it was the morning, it was about 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm in my bedroom, sat on my bed thinking, you know, what do I need to do? And trying to mentally make a list in my head of the things. I was completely wide awake. And from the top right-hand corner of my room, above me, I clearly heard him call my name in a very ecstatic, like, Reeves, this is my only option to get your attention. And I sat there for maybe 10 minutes trying to think, what did I just, am I going mental? I've never had that since, nothing like that since. But that one time it happened.
I find that fascinating.
Yeah, you know. Jumping on to what you just said about, you know, the ghosts and stuff. You know, no, I agree. It's an impossible. You can't answer it. It's impossible. But maybe if a ghost or a consciousness is energy, that energy over time fades. Okay, so for example, you get a haunting where people a few hundred years ago see the ghost of a lady in white walking up a driveway or whatever. Okay, and then over the years, that apparition gets fainter and fainter until it fades away, but you still hear that lady walking up the driveway, you still hear those footsteps. Maybe the apparition, maybe there's the, as the energy dispenses over the decades, it fades away after a while and it's gone. Who knows? I mean, it's all speculation.
It is. I also think that's probably, I mean, that's I do agree to an extent that that's maybe what may be going on, but it may also be why you have so many instances of those who have recently passed over and people see them in a solid state, a solid form.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've heard of so many cases where they've bumped into somebody or they've walked past somebody and they've recognized them, you know, very clearly in the same kind of manner, the same clothing. They've just seen them from the previous week, but that died a couple of days before or something along those lines, you know, and it happens again and again and again. And one instance I know of, an ex-girlfriend of mine, this is going years back now, we were kind of talking about this kind of thing. She said, oh, I've seen a ghost. She said, I said, oh, what, who did you see? She said, oh, I saw my grandmother. I said, oh, really? Okay. When was that? Been dead about a year, but I was ironing at the bottom of the stairs. I'd set up the ironing board at the bottom of the stairs and was ironing the kids' clothes. And I noticed that she was stood at the top of the stairs, just looking down at me with a smile on her face. And I said, wow, just definitely your grandmother. She goes, yeah, as solid as you are now, very solid. She was just looking down on me. And as she said, I wasn't remotely scared or worried. It's just my grandmother. She was looking down and keeping an eye and just interested in looking what I was doing. She didn't say anything. I said, well, how long did you see your grandmother there for? She goes, oh, I don't know, about 35, 40 minutes. I was like, of all these fleeting ghost stories, just so happens, an ex has this, and I'm thinking, what do you mean 35 or 40 minutes? She goes, yeah, about the time it took me to do my ironing. That's like, bloody hell. there's no fat chance of me seeing a ghost ever. You know, I've never seen a ghost, and yet there she is. Talk about seeing a grandmother.
Maybe in our lives that we see many ghosts, but because they look so real and so solid, maybe you've seen a ghost and you don't know you've seen a ghost. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. That's what I find really fascinating. Those incidents where people have seen relatives or they've seen a friend, close friends. You know, they're it's a bit like, you know, would you recognize your brother or your mum if you saw them in the street? Of course you would, you know. And so that, you know, the people like that who are instantly recognizable to them, they wave at them, they don't wave back. But they don't know that they've passed on. They don't know that, didn't know that they died 6 months prior or something like that. And it's those kind of incidents I just find really interesting, because I'm thinking, well, are all of these down to, well, you just saw somebody similar to them? You just saw somebody who looks a bit like your mum, or you saw somebody who looks a bit like your best mate or whatever. That is quite condescending, actually. You know, when these skeptics will just say, well, it was just it was your imagination. It's because you're thinking about them, or you just saw somebody who looked a bit like your mate. But yeah, I do find it fascinating. You know, ghosts are fascinating. I just wish I'd see one, because I've never, ever seen, or I don't think I've ever seen one, let's put it that way.
Well, on that note, Justin, I think we're going to wrap this episode up. I'm sure you'll be back for another chat about something, because I'm sure we have only scratched the surface, really. But what's in store for the Paranormal Monkey podcast? Where are you going from here?
At the minute, it's kind of obviously continuing to do things every Monday. It's trying to speak to a wide range of people. I've got guests now up till September, going into September now. And it's continuing to get across, I suppose, for me, the best people in the field, you know, and I've always tried to get that. I try not to go for anybody particularly obscure. It's people who are either well known, whether that's in academia or whether that's on, whether it's ghost investigators or, you know, paranormal investigators, on whether it's on YouTube or people who have been on TV, and just try and get that wide range. I'd like more eyewitnesses to come forward and chat to me, because I've spent a lot of time kind of talking to academics, but just continue to grow the channel. I'd find it endlessly fascinating. And one thing I'm beginning to branch into now is other areas. So I've gone into, whereas before it was just purely ghosts and poltergeists, now I've gone into the UFO realm a little bit with a couple of my guests, which is another whole ball game. I think whole world, the UFO world. And yeah, so that, going into that. But also I want to go into cryptids. I've tried to contact the Loch Ness Museum at Drumna Drochit. I want to get a Loch Ness monster expert. I want to get somebody who hunts cryptids or Sasquatches. And the paranormal is such a huge area, such a huge field, and nothing's really off limits. It is, you know, there are some very strange subject matters and out there, and I just find that endlessly fascinating. And I may not know much about it, but I still find I've got that fascination for it. And so I'd want to try and get that across to people watching as well.
Awesome. Okay, Justin, well, thanks very much for joining me on this episode. Thanks to everybody that's listened to this episode right to the end. It is very much appreciated. Remember, you can like and share as much as you can, because it really helps the channel. Thanks for listening once again, and talk to you soon.
About cozy comforts, and with Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your favorites and still hit your health goals, from breakfast bagels and meal-prepped enchiladas to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles. You won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at hero.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.